Hi, this is Lori, your host of Happiness Hangout, a space to come and elevate your happiness levels. You, me, and our guests will discuss and help you apply happiness to all aspects of your life, even if you're already happy. Get your daily boost of information to help you feel your best. Hi, this is Lori Peters, and welcome to the Happiness Hangout, a place and space to help you feel your best. We're very excited for our show today to be talking about an extremely important topic, and this is the topic of bullying. And today, it's as we say, it's a very important topic, and we want to, we have a guest today, Andy Katsina, who's going to be discussing how to get through bullying, things that we can do through her book. So I want to tell you just a little bit about our guest. Her name is Andy Katsina, and she is passionately dedicated to healing and changing the lives of teens and their parents by bringing a fresh new story of bullying. Having written the book, Fat Girl and the Sankara Parasite, which has been called the Anti-Bullying Manifesto, at one point in her life, she woke up to the divine art of writing and now has written 20 books. She was called to share this special story as she became deeply concerned by the challenge of bullying and the sad numbers of teen suicide. Her book, Fat Girl and the Sankara Parasite, tells a story that is healing, rare, and will bring a new, open, loving discussion to this important subject of bullying. Now, Andy's had several different jobs. She's an athletic, champion athletic swimmer, a coach, a teacher, and a youth leader. She's also been in the financial world, in accounting and related areas. And then she realized her passion for writing. And she took that passion, and she loves working with youth and their parents and adults to stop bullying. She says, I love taking my readers on fantastic journeys. The enjoyment and taste of adventure my stories give to my readers warms me greatly. So, Andy Katsina, welcome to the Happiness Hangout. We're so glad to have you.
Oh, hi, Lori. What a wonderful introduction. Thank you so much.
Of course. And what a background you have. You know, before we start talking about this really important subject, I'd love just to hear a little bit of, more about you. And were there any specific things that happened to you that took you to the transition of, I need to write about this. I am so passionate about this. Tell us just a little more about how that happened for you.
Well, I'll tell you from the beginning, I have a very kind of, I don't actually have children myself, worse luck, but I do have a very sincere wish that children are okay and in good stead, because I grew up in an orphanage, Lori, and I tell you, it was very, very draconian. It was like Oliver Twist. It was very tough, very difficult, and I really appreciate what a warm, loving home life can mean to children. Also, on the other side of the coin, I also appreciate how school can also be like a refuge to children who are not coming from a warm, loving background. Now, the fact is, and what I believe, and I know you do too, Lori, is that all children have the right, the human right, to go to school unaccosted. So really, this is what we're talking about. Let's just make school life, even playing field, a safe place for children, which it should be. And when I say children, I mean from kindergarten all the way up to university level. And that's what it's all about. So I think my kind of passion and concern about kids comes from a very neglected background.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Oftentimes, I found the same commonality with you, that things that I didn't feel good about as a kid, I've tended to address also on a bigger scale than just myself. So I really understand that. Sometimes our hardest times, I say many times, our hardest times in life are what bring us forward to really understand it and be able to help other people. So that's a very beautiful thing. So let's talk about the book a little. Really interesting name, Fat Girl and the
Sankara.
I'm saying that right. Yeah. Fat Girl and the Sankara Parasite. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, now the book is, I'm a fantasy writer, so let's get that straight. There's no factual, it's not a factual account of anything. It's a fantasy tale. And I've been very fortunate enough to be able to use fantasy as a framework in which to weave a story where we can follow a young girl who's bullied to the edge of suicide. She really is relentlessly bullied, and she actually wants to kill herself. And we follow the book, her, through the book. We see her being terribly abused, terribly harmed. She also harms herself through, like, pain and desperation. She lives with an alcoholic mother. Her brother's gone off to war to represent his family and his country. Then they're expecting a missing in action or killed in action notice at any day, and that's because of his mother's neurosis. Her father died, and she's got very, very few friends. And she's very isolated. But as we go through the book, we see her through her torment. And this is where the fantasy world comes into it, because I'm able to take her to an alternative world, which is very much a reflection of her own world, but where only the truth survives. And she discovers that bullies have a parasite in them, and this parasite propagates hatred. And it's infectious. It infects the bullies. It infects the people who are bullied. So it's all about hatred and, like, hate contagion and things like this. And then when she's back in her own world, back in her own destitute, desperate situation, she finds the strength by thinking about the things she learned in the alternate world. And she discovers that bullies are not heroes. Bullies are not even kind of decent people. Bullies are just kind of weak, a little bit cowardly, probably in fear of losing social status, or in fear of their own abusive situations at home, or in fear of losing kind of like a big macho persona. And she learns that really people, her school friends, her school colleagues, they're just the same as her in one way or another. They're probably afraid of something. And because of this, she starts to get stronger and stronger. She learns how to say no to the bullies, because invariably, Laurie, I think you probably well know this, but bullies only tend to bully when they're allowed to do so. Now, I'm not saying that young school kids allow bullies to bully them. No, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is it's a reluctance allowance. You don't want them to bully you, but you don't kind of break the pattern, and you don't speak up to say no. And it's a painful process to break the pattern, but bullies will never pick on somebody who gives them a hard time about it. That's a fact. Anyway, so she goes through all this process. And towards the end of the book, she writes an open letter to the school principal. He reads it out to the whole school. She gets a standing ovation. This is this section of the book, which I refer to as the anti-bullying manifesto, where she lists what a bully is, why a bully is, and how to stop being bullied, what to do if you see anyone being bullied. And we also address the situation where we have, I call them the bystanders. And these are the children, they're not bullies themselves, but they stand around when somebody's being bullied, they watch it, they have fun, they laugh about it, or they do nothing about it. This is a very strong group of people, and in this group we can find young heroes. We can find people who can just, any one, two people who can just say, hey, this is not right. You know, we just, they have to make a stand for the, you know, for the students, for the other people who are in their class or in their school. So we go through all of this. By the end of the book, she shook the bullies off. They do not bully her anymore. She's got a lot of respect from other people in the school. And she's now working for the anti-bullying society, which she's helped set up at school. So from the start of it, with a destitute child who wants to kill herself, to the end of it, where she's got rid of the bullies, and it shows you step by step how she's done it. It's not easy, but it can be done. The whole thing. Now, Sankara is this is a word which is from Near East philosophy, and it simply means bad thoughts. no sankhara, so we can figure out, like, no bad thoughts, you know, no hatred. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell, Laurie.
Well, you know, I've had many thoughts in thinking about bullying as our show was coming. And it's interesting because, I live in about the center of the United States. And things could... Right. And good things that I've noticed are the schools are having so much more in terms of, oh, goodness, their ability to put on programs. And by the way, I'm hearing a lot of noise, just so you know, through the system. And I'm not sure who that is, but wanted you to know. That might be you. It might be something else, just so you're aware. So the bullying, the programs that are out there and that are being put out there in the schools are pretty eye-opening. And I don't remember as a kid having those kinds of programs. I remember the general programs in the 70s and early 80s that they had around things, you know, things that happened to a woman as they grew into being a woman and how to do CPR. But there wasn't things, programs about important things like bullying. And they have them now. And I think it is making our kids much more aware because of, I hate to say this, the suicides and things that have happened through social media. I don't know if you're seeing those kinds of programs in schools, but I know that they're there, and thank goodness they are.
I mean, you're spot on with that, actually, and definitely thank goodness that they are there, Laurie. I think it's slow in coming because bullying's been around. I mean, it's been around for a very, very long time, but it just seems the things that we've done about it as a society, we've written many, many books about it, had all kinds of programs about it, but in the end of the day, it's not working. It's not working, Laurie. And it's like, I think this is why I took a fantasy angle to the whole situation to make it a very interesting story. But what is happening now is, you're right, some of the schools, they have policies. The problem with the majority of them, and I don't speak for all schools because some are earnestly trying to do something about the situation, but what the problem is, Laurie, is that some of schools are kind of making a song and dance about, yes, we have these anti-bullying policies, but they fall short. And how they fall short is that they have no enforcement. We need a zero tolerance enforcement, and this really is the only way that things are going to start to happen. What do you think?
Well, yes. I mean, I think the programs might help some students be more aware, but nothing matters if you have a policy if it's not really enforced.
Yes.
You know, you can have all the written words you want. So I understand that. And, you know, we talk about bullying and who it affects, and we know it affects the student deeply who it's happening to, some to the point that they take their lives over it. But does it affect anybody else? I mean, their parents and friends and...
Well, Laurie, I don't know about you personally, but like I know so many people, and the vast majority of them know somebody who was bullied at school, whether it's a son, a daughter, a mother, a father, a cousin, a friend. So, you know, most of us know someone who was bullied, and there's varying degrees. I've got a very good friend who I grew up with, a school friend. She was bullied for 3 years. Now, what I can say in every single case, and some of these people are now in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, even the 70s years of age, they all remember the bullying with very sad recollection. It affects everybody. I mean, it affects the family, it affects the individuals, it affects the individual's friends. Some of these individuals don't even have friends. As a society as a whole, it affects us in a bigger way because some of the individuals who are bullied, and I'm only saying individuals, I'm meaning kind of all ages here. Mm-hmm. It affects society as a whole because some of these people are really kind of damaged as they get older, when they get into a more productive phase of their life, when they're in the late 20s, early 30s, they're getting into a career. You know, some of them are manic depressives or just merely depressive. Some of them suffer from a lot of stress. Some of them still suffer from feelings of isolation or feelings of inadequacy. Some of them turn to violence, and even in the schools, we've actually seen some of them, they kind of, in response to the bullying that they suffer, they become exceedingly violent with very, very dire consequences. I don't think in society we're recognizing the actual degree to which bullying really affects us. And when you consider the United States alone, 30% of your people go through bullying at school. 30%, this is terribly high. I'm sure it's quite as high in England. Now, these people, they're going to grow up and they're going to go into society, and they are going to take that pain with them.
And how that manifests is in their workplace and with their families, and then it just keeps going and going.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very, very serious, a very, very insidious problem. But as a society as a whole, it's something, because it's been around for such a long time, kind of there on the sidelines, always there, ready to bite your ankles. We have not recognized it as being a real major culprit in like social unrest. Not social unrest on a big scale, but like a microcosm of social unrest can be probably traced directly back to bullying. It's very insidious, and it is a true problem which needs to be addressed. And people like yourself, people like me, you know, I mean, what the work you're doing is like phenomenal anyway, spreading happiness to people.
Well, you know, we want to get it out there. I mean, we want to talk about these things. The more we talk, the more creative we can be. And, you know, I have to tell you, Andy, it's so funny. Today, I was doing my work, and I kept walking around thinking, I've never been bullied. That's really great. I sat down here, and do you know, the minute we got on the air, I remembered. And I remember vividly. I'll tell you, I was probably in fourth grade. He was in third, something like that. Kid across the street. And the funny thing was, our family loves to use humor. Okay. Yeah. That's how we roll.
You've got a great personality. Yeah.
Thank you. That's how we get through things in life. That's how we, you know, we were, you know, growing up in a town like I did, you had to be humble, and you were self-deprecating, and you used your sense of humor to tease. And I remember being scared. And I was in his driveway, and he put up his dukes. You know, he was going to fight me. He was a little kid. And I just made this kid laugh so hard, he couldn't punch me. He tried to. Wow. But I used my sense of humor, and he never did anything again. And I thought, well, that was really interesting. I use my strength. And as a little kid, like, how did I know to go do that? I think, I don't know, but you're right. I remember it as vividly as I can. You know, I'm in my 50s. So I remember it as vividly as I can. And then it hit me. Oh my gosh, there was a girl. This was probably sixth grade. And she was a bully. When I come home to see my parents, I still know where she grew up. And I still look at that house and remember her. I won't say her. I know her full name. I won't say it on the air. Yeah. And she was going to just take me out. I didn't do anything. I think she saw me as weak because I was very underconfident as a younger kid. Not anymore, but as a kid.
No.
But as a kid, very underconfident and fearful, and I was perfect prey. So I did what any kid would do. We owned businesses, so my mother went to work, and I went on lockdown in the house. And I went on lockdown, and my other friend, they kept calling me to come outside. I wouldn't answer. Finally, the other girl, who was my friend, screamed up, "She's not going to do anything. It's okay. So I'm not coming out." And then finally, I went out, and she didn't do anything. I don't know what took her back. I certainly was a nice person, but she obviously had her issues. And as a kid, that's what she's focused on.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
I said to myself, here I am thinking I had no bullying effects or nothing. Mm. I guess because I never really was in an actual fight.
Yeah.
But those were my two experiences. And I thought, yes, I was. So if I was, I bet almost everybody had some experience close to it.
And how fortunate you were. And the other thing is what you mentioned, which is very significant, is your friend was there. Now, It's hard to believe, but there are some young people who don't have friends, or they have very kind of flimsy friendships, shall we say. They don't have a real support system from the friends. These children, now, your bully encounters were short-lived, and that was it, but you still remember them. Now, could you imagine having this every day, the stress and the psychological strain for such a young person to have to deal with?
No, I can't imagine. And you know what I want to do? Most of our listeners listen through podcasts after the show, but if anybody is out there, and anybody has been bullied or knows somebody of experience or it's affected your life, call us and tell us about the story at 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to make sure we did that. So yeah, I mean, having friends is one of the keys and a good support system. But like you said, many people who are bullied, even their friends will turn away from them.
Yeah. It's such a sad thing. And funny enough, in my book, the girl, Genesis, her friend did turn away from her. And the reason she turned away from her is to join the bullies, who are called the witch bitches. And she did it. And later on in the book, she comes back to her friend and she apologizes profusely. And she explains the truth. And she said, I just didn't want to be bullied. I mean, so she was scared as well. But What my contention is really is, like, how is this going on and going on and going on year in, year out, year in, year out, 50 years later, year in, year out? If we as a society say, okay, this is enough, it's got to have to stop. You know, there's other things in society which we did make stop. You know, it's like society, people as a whole, when they come together and they work together in unison, we are very, very, very powerful, and we can make things happen. There's some very antisocial words which were in circulation for a long time that they don't exist anymore. Or maybe they do, but you just never, ever hear people saying it. Because at one point, perhaps 20 years ago, people said, okay, this is not politically correct. So you know yourself, Laurie, like examples of these things. Now, what we can do as a society, we can say, okay, look, bullying, it has to stop. But people are kind of I speak to many people and they say, yes, but we don't know how to. We try to tell them and they won't listen or they don't understand. Okay, well, forget about all of that is what I say. Why don't we start in kindergarten? We start to teach children in kindergarten, say, look, bullying is not accepted. If you see anybody being bullied or anything, the teacher stops it, whoever stops it. But you instill those morals and those ethics. So by the time those children are leaving kindergarten, just as a matter of course, those social morals and standards are ingrained in them. We're not punishing them by teaching them don't bully. It's not a punishment. You know, it's only going to, like, make them better, make them more compassionate, and also protect vulnerable children. So if we start this now, start it in kindergarten, look back in 10 years' time, my gosh, I mean, it will totally be eradicated, or pretty much on the way to being eradicated, you know. So really, we have to, as a society, we have to recognize that bullying is something that we have to be on the lookout for, because it's a very, very insidious parasite, should we say. It's a very antisocial activity, and it's truly harmful. I mean, my gosh, you know, what algebra can teach children that they can learn and then use like 20 years later, I'm still not sure of, and I was an accountant. But what bullying, to teach children about bullying, they can use that for the rest of their life. You know, it's like it's putting compassion in them. I mean, most children are compassionate, but it's reinforcing a compassionate stance. It's reinforcing respect for your peers. You know, it kind of makes people better. Not to, as you, in your own words, Laurie, not to see other children as prey, you know?
And you're right. It has to start one person at a time, in the home, and you're right, and in the schools very young, to make it a mindset, to make it a habit. And yes, things, you know, nothing's going to be perfect. There are always going to be people with issues. But if the majority stands up and there's a shift in thought.
Yes.
Just like wearing seatbelts. I never wore my seatbelt. Yes. Never wore my seatbelt. Never, never. And I had a friend in college who did. And I, something triggered inside me. Something said to me, if she does it, she's a smart girl. If she does it, I should do it. I can't even get in the car without an automatic putting the seatbelt on. That was a shift in thinking. That took so much marketing out to the world about why it had to happen to change a whole mind shift. I mean, yes, it can be done because we see it done with things all the time. That's the example I thought of. But I don't even, like I said, I don't even get in the car without grabbing for it. Where back
in
the day,
that's a great example.
You didn't do that.
Yes, exactly. That's a great example.
Yeah. So, you know, and I do want to talk for a little bit about social media. You know, Andy, I don't even know how these children today survive with social media. I know how I do it because I was more mature and older when it really became prevalent, and I use it for good. I see people sometimes using it for other things that maybe I don't agree with. I just kind of move on and don't pay attention. But so I never really had to go through that as a kid. And I asked my friend, I knew we were doing this show, and I asked my friend, she's got a daughter who's a senior and a daughter in eighth grade. And I said to her, what is your eighth grader doing on social media? What do they care about? And she said, I said, they're looking at their phone all the time. Is it all boys? Because they're girls. Is it boys? Is it, what is it? And she said, they're checking to see like how many people reacted to their post, if it's their birthday, how many people said happy birthday. They're looking for, like, I kind of saw it as they're looking to see constant acceptance.
Yes, yes.
And that isn't that what everybody wants? Everybody wants to be heard. Everybody wants to be accepted for who they are. Mm. And you know, there's a whole, we could go on and on about Facebook, but there's a whole thought behind not just Facebook, but all social media being used for people's self-esteem. And when they don't get the likes and the comments from people, they can become almost addicted to it. The need for the acceptance through there, instead of, we all know, we've got to go inside ourselves to come outside. So we've got to go find that everything we need inside. We can't look external. Sure, external is great. Sure, we like it. Sure, we're hopeful that, you know, we get accepted by people. But at the same time, it's really got to come from within you. Then you got a kid on your hands who doesn't, you know, quite frankly, isn't fully mentally developed. And you could have trouble there. So as much as it can be used for good, and I know with her, it's a pretty good source. I mean, she doesn't have any problems. What in the heck are we going to do about social media? I mean, you hear people committing suicide because people get behind that computer where they really don't have to be face-to-face, and they do horrible things. What can we do, you know?
Well, I tell you, it's we are becoming very, very fickle, you know, and you summed it up greatly. I mean, you know, if people don't get enough likes, they kind of, it puts them into such a frenzy, you know, and they become depressed about it. And, you know, no one likes me, you know, what's going on? So it can actually, you know, it's almost like being a marionette. And you know, you've got all these kind of people who the strings are being pulled. Simply based on likes or something like this. What I can say is that I would say that this is the bronze age of technology and social media technology, because it's like everything has to be hammered out. You know, we have to find our feet, find our medium. As far as I know, like, I was the first generation, you too, Laurie, of the computer era. I can vaguely remember punch cards, and I do say vaguely, the old punch cards. And we came up through the microcomputers, the first PCs, and now we've got the all the whiz-a-ma-jigs things. We were still of an age where we went out to socialize. You know, we enjoyed nature, we enjoyed our friends, we enjoyed hanging out. This is like a new era where basically everybody's running around almost like headless chickens because it's so new that there's no precedence. There's no precedence. So it's like people don't really know how to react. People don't know how to react to not having likes, except they feel like a social pariah or they feel like nobody likes them. Now, the other thing is, like you said, some people are using the computer and anonymity as a weapon. And that is from a sheer place of weakness. But I'm not sure about how that can be monitored because when you have these big organizations like Facebook, Pinterest or Pinterest,
Snapchat, Instagram,
Snapchat. Yeah. Now, what's actually happening is you've got these kind of big global organizations who are not actually taking full responsibility for the access, the open access that people are having to each other. Like you go to a nightclub, I don't know how it is nowadays, but you used to go to a nightclub, they'd have bouncers, doormen, you call them, they'd have doormen on the door. Have you got the right tie on? Have you got the right shoes? Is your dress okay? And you go to a different type of nightclub and they'd have different standards, but there would be somebody there kind of controlling the access. Inside, if there's any problems, there'd be a couple of people hanging around to deal with the situation. Now, this is a nightclub owner. He had a responsibility to keep things inside his club, like a pretty even keel. How is it that someone can come along with a huge nightclub like Facebook or these other things you mentioned and just not have any responsibility whatsoever for what the heck is going on inside it? I mean, come on. This is not right. You know, you have to take some kind of responsibility. You have to, because you're letting people kind of, it's like an open door policy, but you know, you have to have some kind of form of control. You have to, it's a social responsibility.
Yes. So, and you, a lot of it's used, you know, it's a business too. So a lot of it is looked at from the business perspective. And I really hear what you're saying. I mean, companies are trying to be more socially responsible, and that would be, you know, that would be a instead of giving, no, I don't say instead of, give to charity, but look inside your own walls first about, you know, being responsible.
Yeah. If a farmer for eggs, for instance, is selling eggs and that's all about making money, but some of that money, he takes it and he puts it into the farm and he says, keep it clean and everything because I don't want to give people salmonella. Now, these business models, they are all about profit for the majority of them. But you can't just take your profit and run and say, okay, sod you, bye-bye, got my money and run. They have to put some form of investment back into the model to keep it safe and clean, you know, you have to do this. So, you know, responsibility, social responsibility, it's an onus. And these companies, these corporations right now are kind of ignoring that onus. They take in all the money they can get and they're ignoring the onus that they have. Perhaps not to everybody, but there's certain areas of people in this model who are vulnerable. For instance, I could name one, a young school kid who is being cyberbullied. We owe them a duty. You know, the child or the mother goes to the headmaster and says, look, she's being cyberbullied. The headmaster should be able to go to an authority, perhaps an authority that works with the police, you know, a child protection authority. They should be able to phone up Facebook, you know, with all the right codes and everything and say, okay, we have just had the most disgusting, terrible thing happen. You know, somebody's told this kid to go and kill themselves or, you know, said things which can lead to harm. Who is this person? And for heaven's sake, you can't expect Facebook or, and I'm not saying that Facebook do this, by the way, but you cannot expect them to say, oh, I'm sorry, but we can't tell you that information. You know, this is where social responsibility comes in. Because otherwise, they're making like a bed they make a hotbed of abusive behavior. You know, they facilitate an abusive behavior.
Well, you know, the challenging thing too is that once something gets popular in the mainstream, the students or kids look for something else. Like, for example, when Facebook got really popular and grandma was on it, then the kids all left and went to Snapchat or Instagram. Now more businesses and older adults are using some of that. And then I had some students, I interviewed some students because I work with a lot of college students.
That's right. Yes,
and yeah, and I interviewed some students through another avenue where I work with kids. And I said, you're telling me that you like Facebook. I said, but I heard that kids don't. And they said, well, here's what we do. We don't like Facebook in high school. But once we get to college, we're back on it again because it's the only way to communicate with everybody. So, because everybody is on it, and so we go back to it. But the thing is, if students who are younger are finding their own venues and their own other social medias, then adults can't even see what's going on, and a parent or a guardian may never even know, and the poor kid is living in this just myriad of pain. And they're trying to deal with it themselves. If they're lucky, they have a friend to deal with it. If not, they're dealing with it themselves. So you're right. Where does free speech come in? Where does the law, and I'm not asking you to answer this, but where does the law draw the line on where they can step in and where they can't? You know, the problem is after something horrible happens, then they get your computer and search everything.
But yeah, that's
my question. Where does the law stand? What can you do? And this would be wonderful to find the answer out to. What can you do while it's happening is our question, I think.
Well, this is the reason why I was calling this technological development the Bronze Age, because we've just seen the golden age of television. Now we're going past the golden age and we're going on the slide now. But things come into fruition. They begin and it's totally chaotic. It's very chaotic now with all this social media because, you know, in 20, 30 years' time, it will all be nice and smooth and oiled. But right now, it's a free-for-all. Now, your question, what you're asking, is very significant. Where do you go and what do you do? Now, this is why I'm saying I totally believe in freedom of speech, totally. So we're not talking about curtailing people's freedom of speech. No, say what you want. But if you are saying abusive things, especially to children, especially to minors, then there will be consequences. You can say what you want. We won't stop you saying what you want. But if you cannot control your thoughts or your aggression, and if you aim it at minors, and it also if minors are aiming it at themselves, then we need to have a body. I think the police are trying to do something, you know, but this is probably more in the areas of different types of child abuse. But what we need now is we need like a watch body for young people, and we need to get the age groups right, but we need a watch body where when there has been offences, it can be reported. And the person spewing out all this vile hatred will be found. I mean, it's not difficult to trace them. It is not difficult to trace them. It's just, as I say, these people who own these companies, they're kind of skirting the responsibility. They shirk it off, skirt around it. And they don't take responsibility. But if we have certain watchdog bodies, which are really geared for children, for bully situations, for abuse, verbal abuse situations, then that watchdog body will have the power to demand like traceable links, to really deal with the situation. Because it's, you know, some of it's very, very chargeable. Legally chargeable. We don't have the laws in place right now because it's a new arena.
I mean, if a kid was saying some of those horrible things in person at a school, the teacher would have them in the principal's office, calling their parents and doing something about it. But in this scenario, you know, it's a little tougher because again, sometimes the parents, teachers, adults don't even know it's happening. So that's That's the part of it. So, you know, back to your book. You know, I know you've got stories and of people who have read your book and you know, maybe what they have responded. Tell me a little bit more about like what teens can get out of your book and maybe any stories that have come about for kids that have helped them.
Well, I think really what one of the main things that they get out of this book is by the time they've read it, they can kind of shake off this feeling of total isolation. They can, what the book does, and, you know, the strength of weaving a fantasy realm around it, you're free to then show a totally different side of things. This is why I use the analogy of a parasite. What young people get from this book is they get to process a different mental approach to the thinking about the situation. Because at the moment, they kind of feel isolated, they feel put upon, they feel abused verbally, mentally, emotionally, hopefully not physically, but that can happen. And they cannot process it. That you know, young people, as you know, Laurie, we have to mature to be able to process our thoughts in a very constructive way, whereby we don't kind of cave in on ourselves and become very, very introspective and very subjective, and it can be very harmful. But this book shows them a different way to approach the bully situation. It shows them a different way to view the bully. It shows them the strength within them, and it shows them how they can take a step back. It does. It's not kind of altogether unrealistic. It's not saying, oh, you know, do this and this and you'll be fine. It's not, because it shows some terrible situations in the book where the girl's abused and picked on at school and just bad situations. But it also kind of walks a step by step through the bully situation, through this darkness. And at the end of it, they can see a light, because they can know that the strength within them is there. Just like you said, Laurie, the happiness within people, it's all there, the strength, not to be bothered about being light, but it's all within us. And this book kind of helps to unlock that for younger people who may not have realized that at that stage in their life. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very powerful tool. The book is a very, very powerful tool. And also, I've had relatives of children who are being, but when I say children, I mean young people, who are being bullied. And they've contacted me. And they've said how it really opened up a family dialogue, and how the child could be more articulate, I guess you could say, about the topic that they felt so locked into. It also, the book also addresses, Laurie, have you heard of the very sad phenomena where young people cut themselves?
Sure have, yes.
Yeah, I was kind of new to that. And when I was doing my research, it is so, so sad. And there's a whole chapter on that, and it also addresses that situation. So really, the book kind of encompasses the whole situation. It does not go into cyberbullying too much. There is a young person in there who did commit suicide, a young school boy who committed suicide due to cyberbullying. That's mentioned in the book. But because that is actually a whole different volume. That's another volume. But I think the book, and this is why they're calling it the Anti-Bullying Manifesto, is because it addresses the whole situation, and people are using it now as a tool to basically extract a young person out of this very, very bad, desperate situation.
Well, you know, it's wonderful that what you're doing, and I know one person can do a lot, and you're doing such good work here. You know, I hope that at least through this show that we can make people more aware of it. When they see children, it's and they see something, it triggers in their mind to get involved, to just one person at a time, you know, the awareness. And like I said, your book can reach a lot of people. Yeah. And, you know, with that, believe it or not, this has gone absolutely too fast, but I do want to make sure people can find you and the book. So we're talking about the book, The Fat Girl and Sankara Parasite, the ebook edition. Now, is this a giveaway? You're doing the ebook edition as a giveaway? Tell us about that.
Yeah, actually, people, if they want to find me, they just go on Google and put my name in on Google, or go on Amazon and put my name in on Amazon. They can buy the book in paperback or ebook.
Okay. But
what I'd like to say to you and your listeners, Laurie, is that anybody who wants the book, they can contact your show, and I'm sure you'll forward the book to them. They don't have to pay for it. This book was basically, it came to me as a gift, really. You know, it's one of the books that I wrote all the way from start to finish without too much difficulty. And it's a book that I kind of prayed how I'd heard about all these teen suicides, and I wanted to help, and I didn't know how I could help. And I kind of prayed on it, and this is what the result was. So, you know, they don't have to buy the book. They can have a free copy of the book. But I would really ask that people read the book. And, you know, let's make a stand. Let's make a start.
Well, absolutely. You know, you can Google Andy at A-N-D-I, Andy Katsina, K-A-T-S-I-N-I. Or you can find... this is going to go out through social media in a few days.
Yeah.
I will also put all this out, this information out, and how to get the book. But you can go to my page at bbsradio.com/happinesshangout, and you can find me directly. But I will get this out on social media as well. This is a wonderful gift that you're giving to people, Andy.
Thank you. It's
so needed, and this is what we like to do at the Happiness Hangout. We like to put things out there that bring greatness to the world, and you're part of that. And I would like to wrap up by just thanking you, Andy, so much for the work
thank
you're doing.
You.
And thank you for a wonderful interview.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. I totally appreciate it. And I absolutely love the work that you're doing. I support you. It's phenomenal what you're doing. And I hope your readers know that.
Wonderful. And everybody, make sure you get the book, Fat Girl and the Sankara Parasite. And you can find it on through Andy Katsina, Amazon, or through me. So
excellent.
That's our... Wonderful. Thank you. So that's our show for today. And I'd like to thank our sponsors, AirServe of Mentor and AirServe of Strongsville, your residential and commercial heating and cooling company in the Cleveland, Ohio area. Veteran owned, they provide the best warranties and guarantees and best financing in the business. Just go to www.airserve.com/mentor for the east side of Cleveland, /Strongsville for the west side. And Humanity Thriving Out Loud, read The Magic Happens magazine at www.themagichappensnow.com. This is Lori Peters. Once again, we're very happy to have you on the Happiness Hangout. We'll see you on social media, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Thanks for being and listening with us on the show. Have a great night.
Hi, this is your host, Lori. Want to get more happiness? Check out all the free readings, activities, and my blog at my website. Want to learn how to deal with life's challenges from your positive core? Check out Empowering Yourself to Happiness class, done totally online. You can find it all at www.happinesshangout.net. www.happinesshangout.net. Come explore and feel better wherever you are. This is Lori Peters with the Happiness Hangout. I provide presentations on happiness and well-being to businesses, schools, and anyone involved in wellness and professional days. Check out tons of free resources and activities also at my website, www.happinesshangout.net. Feel better wherever you are. Help us grow the Happiness Hangout Show. Become a sponsor. Businesses and nonprofits, get your info out there to thousands of my listeners all over the world for just pennies. Individuals can also sponsor one or more shows, and you get a shout out to your favorite charity. Several packages available. Come see what you get and put out there what's important to you. Go to www.happinesshangout.net. www.happinesshangout.net for more information.